Welcome to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. I am Doc Mike, host of the podcast. A series of Forrest Gump-like events have brought me to where I am, a small-town country dentist. My experiences in country living, country freedom, country dentistry, and my reaction to pertinent current events may help you live a life of more freedom and less worry. Thank you for choosing the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Now let's get to today's freedom-inspiring episode. Hey, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. I don't know what happened there. With the media, yeah, it was really kind of strange. And I honestly don't even know where that sound was coming from. Honest, I have no idea. Anyway, we're on live now. Let's do this thing. That's always something. I'm learning a lot of stuff, running video and audio at the same time, making recording for podcasts and making a recording to put some live video up. Not live, but video of me doing the show. So, I don't know. It's really strange. I'll figure it out eventually. But that sucked. I don't know what the heck happened there. It's okay, but let's get going. Hey, I got a few things to get out of the way. First of all, of course, this is the fastest hour on Real Liberty Media, and I don't turn left. And could you all, if you're on social media, just post that we're live, see if we can bring some people over here, get in the chat room, and, you know, have some conversation. Man, it's crazy. Well, let's finish this first part. Behind the Woodshed, Hal Anthony is on Sundays, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Be sure and check him out. 2 hours, the guy doesn't even hardly take a breath. It's amazing. Packed full of information. And just love listening to Hal Anthony. So join us on Sunday. Tomorrow, the Packers play at like 6:30 a.m. my time. So that'll be out of the way bright and early. Hopefully they do well. They're playing over, you know, across the pond, as they say. And, so I'll be ready for Hal's show at 3 p.m. Eastern time. I got to get used to saying that. And let's see, homestead update. Man, there's really, it's crazy right now that, like today especially, it was so flipping warm that I was really, like, almost uncomfortable. Now, for the rest of you, it's, you know, it's like 80 degrees. It's not that big a deal. But for me, living in the Pacific Northwest, close to the coast, where we would usually have a half inch, an inch of rain by now, our average temperature would be in the upper 60s. The 70, low 70s, like 72 degrees. It's ridiculous. It's like 81 degrees, blue sky and sunshine again. And like I said in previous show, I'm not worrying about it anymore. I'm just going to go with it because I can't do anything about it for sure. And God, it's kind of nice, you know. Like I say, I come home from work, and if there's a game on, I'll sit outside in the, we're calling it the clubhouse now. It's just a little open area outside that's covered. So, and I'll just sit there, man, until 8:30 at night. It's dark and it finally starts cooling off. It's kind of cool just to sit out there and enjoy it. So that's what I do some days. And of course, other days I do the show or do some show notes or work on stuff around here. I did take some drone video today I'll put up. I really like just getting used to using the drone. So today I was doing some tractor work and I just decided I'm just going to put the drone up and just have it, you know, video the work that I was doing. So I'll put that up for a little entertainment. It'll probably be really boring, but it'll be something. You get to see, you know, how the tractor works or what I do on the tractor sometimes. We were just expanded the width of the driveway in one area where the delivery trucks come. And we also park out there, so we thought instead of telling them all the time, just drive across the grass, we just made the driveway wider with some gravel. And I wanted to smooth it out a bit, so that's what we did. There was some, we have a ton of food right now. It's crazy. Like, we're just harvesting food. We have more than we can give away. We're going to have to start, you know, putting some of this up in I love you guys in the chat room. It's great. What was I saying? Oh, we have a ton of vegetables. Can't even give them away. We're going to have to get good at putting them up, you know, so we can preserve them for later. Because, yeah, God, the world is just a crazy place. Today, I'm not really going to talk about that too much, even though I did see that some bridge got blown up, you know, and who knows what the heck is going to happen there. I did want to make a couple political comments, though. I was looking at if you have any kind of media running that's free, it's like you're inundated with these political commercials now. You know, everybody is running their, you know, they're in the rush because we're only, 3 weeks away from elections, maybe four, I don't know, three or four. It's really close, though. So, of course, all the attack ads and all the accusations. Anyway, all of that stuff, and I started looking at the candidates that are running for office, and I just realized that I think there's a reason why the Democrats want so many different pronouns. Really, I'm not sure it matters 100%, because when I look at, like, the Democrat candidates, I honest to God can't tell on most of them if they're male or female. And I'm not really making a joke about it. I mean, if you look at some of them, and I think they're female, but when I start kind of like evaluating them, I'm like, you know, that really could be a dude. It could be. But, oh, anyway, who knows? I'm sure they say that about Republicans too. And it really doesn't matter. I mean, the bottom line is it really doesn't matter. I have a real kind of just a brief story, if we get to it today, about what those hormone blockers do and what some of the surgeries do to those young people who, you know, who end up, you know, going through that process. And it's not pretty, man. It is not pretty. It's, you know, to say it's life-changing really doesn't do it justice at all. It's brutal, inhumane treatment. And I don't know why I don't know why the world has let people fool everybody into thinking that that was an okay thing. I think they could have done like 10 conversions, and if the truth would have gotten out, it would have been banned everywhere. And anyway, I'll get to that a little bit later too. Let's pull up the notes and see what's in the notes for today. I don't have any really short stuff. Everything is long today, which means, of course, well, I might get through it and I might not. Oh, let me just check and make sure everything is running. Last week I didn't turn the studio lights on like an idiot. But probably nobody. I mean, it's kind of better because you can't actually see my face. Probably that's probably okay. Yeah, the Packers are playing in London, I think, tomorrow. So I don't know what time. I don't know what time that is. But you know, locally it's 6:30 a.m. is when that game starts. So it'll be kind of fun to check that out. You know, and that's kind of cool that people, you know, across the pond enjoy American football too. That's pretty awesome. I'll be kind of psyched to see how people react. They're always like so excited to have, a United States team come over and do stuff. At least that's what it seems like. So that's cool. I wonder if the Toronto Blue Jays are still in the baseball I think they got eliminated by Seattle, which would be really sad to actually make it into the playoffs and then get beat by Seattle. It's like Seattle's been hasn't been in the playoffs in, I don't know, decades, it seems like. You know, they're kind of a new team anyway, Seattle is. They haven't been around forever. They've been around like 3 or 4 decades, I don't know. So that's kind of cool. And good luck to them. They're not my team, so I won't be watching it. Let's get into some stuff today, man, because I'm telling you, I am going to completely destroy the idea that you can convert to solar power. And we might as well just do that right now. First, now I got to look at my notes, make sure I did everything. Yep. Yeah. All right, let's do this. So first of all, we're going to talk about this interesting town in Florida. Now, what's interesting about this town, it's called Babcock, Florida. And apparently, and kind of hang with me here for a few minutes, because in the beginning of this story, as with most stories, let me get this. Where is that? Yeah, here we go. Okay, so in the beginning of this story, they were talking about this town that survived Hurricane Ian, and they made it sound like the reason that they survived is because they had the town was built. Initially, it said to be completely dependent on solar power. So I thought, oh, I got to go read this story. So a couple things about where this town is. Number one, it's 30 miles inland. So it's far enough away from the coast that tidal surge probably wouldn't get to them. And that was one of the reasons why they built the town where they did. They did build their homes to withstand, you know, pretty high winds, hurricane force winds, but in Hurricane Ian's case, well, they were 30 miles north of Fort Myer, and Fort Myer, which originally was in the direct hit zone, actually ended up being out of the zone, direct hit zone. Yeah, they still got a crap ton of water, a lot of wind. I mean, Fort Myer did, but I mean, and then 30 miles north of that, yeah, they got a lot of rain, a lot of wind, you know, hurricane force, maybe. One guy said that they felt like they experienced 100 mile an hour winds, and that's okay. I mean, he can feel like it was 100 miles an hour. You know, some of those guys who are on the Weather Channel and they think that they're bearing the brunt of these, you know, hurricane force winds, and then they find out, they break out their little portable anemometer, and it's like 55 miles an hour. Yeah, it seems hellacious when it's unforgiving, because it's not like you get gusts of wind at 55 or 70 or 100 miles an hour in a hurricane. It is a constant freaking blast of wind that may vary a little bit, a couple miles an hour, you know, from second to second or minute to minute. But it's just a constant, forceful wind. So for the guy to say that they experienced 100 mile an hour winds, okay, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But let me just read some of this story to you. Before you sell your home and head for this idealistic community, let me decipher some facts from the story on NPR. Now, the reason I'm using NPR story is because there was all kinds of, this story was on a lot of local news. It was probably on some national news. You know, it was being praised as the way we're going to live, right? And the guy even said, the developer who developed this area even said, you know, we just need to get everybody on board with this and make it so solar power is available to everybody, that everybody could afford it. Well, Okay, so let me talk about this guy. Wilkerson has worked in the solar industry since the 1980s, and one of the things that drew him to Babcock Ranch is its innovative use of solar energy. 870 acres of land owned by the development sport, by the development sport, 650,000 photovoltaic panels. Okay, there's 650,000 panels on this property, and they are operated by Florida Power and Light. So I'm going to do this math, and I don't really expect you to follow me, because a lot of people just can't do that, you know, can't do math in general, or they can't like follow along in their mind, and that's fine with me. Just let's get to the result here, and hopefully I wrote it all down. Jesus, I did the work. Okay, so let's do some math here. There's 650,000 panels for what they said is 30,000 residents, but actually, apparently those 650,000 panels will power 30,000 homes, right? But they don't have that many right now. So that equals about 21.6 panels per house. The panels that I looked at that are available today for either residential or commercial use have a square footage. That square footage for residential use is 15, and for commercial use is 18. So I assume that because Florida Power and Light is in charge of these panels, that they would use the commercial size panels, okay? So 650,000 panels at 18 square feet each is either 325 or 390 square feet of panels per house, all right? Or 11.7 million square feet of solar panel coverage, covering the previously natural ground, which of course down there is like, you know, the marshland and the, you know, coral base of Florida. Roughly one half of a square mile of ground covered. I wish I had my glasses, but I don't. Okay, so let's do this. I said there's about 300, now this is grossly underestimated. I say there's 300 million people in the United States. Well, more than that, which would require, I want to make sure I get this right. So there's 159, 150 million square miles of land to power every home in America. Now, that's not quite right. So I don't want people, you know, accusing me of fudging the numbers, because I said there's 300 million people, which doesn't equal 300 million homes. But let's just see how close we could get, right? So that is 150 million square miles of solar panels. And I said, is that even fathomable? Well, the land area of the entire United States is 3,531,000 square miles. So even if I'm off by a factor of 100, we still do not have enough land mass to put solar panels to power the entire country. So it's time that we stop. It's time that we stop even pretending that this is a future way to power anything. I mean, locally it's fine. And I'll tell you honestly, I bought that solar power generator. It's frustrating as hell. And I'll tell you all the reasons why briefly, because I want to get back to this. So the solar panels, you got to make sure that they are facing the sun. And really, if you want to maximize the input from the solar panels, you want to make sure that they're perpendicular to the sun. So if you're going to make sure that you're constantly getting enough power input to your generator, you're going to have to constantly go move your panels unless you're rich and you can afford these, you know, racks that literally point the panels to the sun. So, and, you know, you can do that, but, I mean, I have a portable unit. It's made for emergencies. That's what I bought it for. So, you know, some power is better than no power. Even if we just used it to power some LED lights around the place while we're setting up the gas generator, that'd be fine. It'll last for days, I'm sure. I'm no doubt would last for days powering little LED lights and charging our computers and cell phones and whatever. But talk about a frustration. If there's the slightest bit of haze or smoke in the air, or God forbid it's cloudy, you're not getting anywhere near the amount of input from the sun that you need to run that solar generator and actually power and use it at the same time. This is going to be one of those things here that we'll charge during the day. We may use, you know, let's say if we have a power outage again, which I'm sure we will, we would charge it during the day if there's sun. Oh, God. This argument is so stupid. It's so incredibly stupid. I wish everybody could actually experience it themselves just to see how stupid solar power is. But anyway, I'm glad I have it, don't get me wrong, but just think of the chances. Okay, this is October, so until April here in Oregon, it's generally cloudy and rainy. And yeah, we'll get a few hours during the day where it might be sunny, or we'll get sun breaks, you know, between storms and stuff. I mean, right now we're just blue sky and sunshine for another week, I think. But you know, most of the time that's not the case. So when am I going to charge the freaking generator? Like, there's just not enough sun during the time I'm probably going to need it most, you know, fall, winter, and early spring. I can already tell it's just not going to work, because I have had blue sky and sunshine since, I don't know, the beginning of September. I think I had 2 days of rain. And it's constantly a hassle to try and keep that thing charged solely on solar power. Like I said, I'm glad I have it. It'll be useful, but God forbid, I would not want to trust my survival on it, that's for sure. And I know you can get bigger ones. I forget, 22 panels out here in the north pasture and take away all of that land, you know, to have my solar panels up there, and I'd be able to power my house when it's blue sky and sunshine, right? So yeah, and okay, so I made the argument. I mean, people may come up with, they may challenge my math here, and I say, go for it. It wasn't like I was being scientific about this. I just want to see generally, like, okay, let's think about this a minute. So what I say there was, there's 3.5 million square miles in the United States, all right? And that could be, I don't know, that could be wrong too, but just let's say that's in the United States, Alaska, Hawaii, the lower 48. I don't know if they counted Puerto Rico or anything like that, but that's the entire land available to be United States. That is not land that you would be able to put solar panels on. You can't put solar panels on the Rocky Mountains, I can tell you that right now. You know, there's no way. I mean, you're not going to cover the Rocky Mountains with solar panels, right? So you can just take a big swath right out of the western part of the country and eliminate it, because you're not going to be taken away, you know, natural, you're not going to take away natural lands like that, you know, these gigantic mountainous regions. You're not going to go into Yosemite and set up solar panels. You're not going to put solar panels wherever there's already a metropolitan area, because it's already developed. You're not going to put solar panels in Alaska or most of Alaska, because it's dark a lot of the time. It's cloudy a lot of the time. I mean, sometimes up north, the sun doesn't come up. Some places, I mean, I was in Juneau for a year in the Coast Guard, and the daylight was from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., 4 hours a day. You're not charging anything in 4 hours in Juneau, Alaska, I can tell you that, because a lot of the times it is cloudy or foggy or hazy. I mean, it's right by the ocean. It's a whole different weather world there. You're just not doing it. And then you got to consider ranch and farmland. I mean, you're going to just eliminate that because you're going to go grow crickets in a warehouse, I guess, so you can eliminate all the ranch and farmland and convert it to solar panels? Or you're going to put solar panels up across all these giant sandy deserts that the United States has? And then how are you going to change that environment? Because now you're cooling the sand. You're probably creating some condensation out there that didn't occur before. There's just no possible way, and I don't understand. I honestly don't understand why somebody, anybody, hasn't come along and said, hey, you know that solar power thing we've been talking about, you know, everybody should get on board with? We don't have enough land mass to do that. Like, unless we can get these solar panels down to the size of a freaking, I don't know, a quarter or smaller, there's just not enough land. Now, I mean, we are the United States. We can just go into third world countries that are, you know, pumping oil for us and selling us, you know, precious metals and rare metals so we can make our batteries, and we can ruin their environment, and then just, you know, I don't know, you know, cable transfer the power to the United States, and everybody will be happy because we didn't do it here. We did it there, wherever there is. Let's see what else they had to say about this. Oh, I said it can't be done, period. Start subtracting out the protected lands, mountainous regions, areas that are dark for months out of the year, farmlands, ranches, already developed areas, etc. There just isn't enough land. The solar array powers the whole community. Oh yeah, this was another fallacy in the story. The solar array powers the whole community and then some, it says. It can supply 30,000 homes. Babcock Ranch has only about 5,000 residents, though. The excess goes back into the grid and is used to power surrounding communities. At night and on cloudy days, a natural gas generator kicks in to fill the gap. Do you see what I'm getting at? So you're not going to have wind necessarily at night to fill in the gap for solar. You can't even begin to create the number of batteries, and I'm just talking one-time creation of batteries, not the constant replacement that you're going to need if you're going to switch to solar power. There isn't enough of these rare earth metals to create all those batteries. They already know that there's you talk about limited supply of resources. You know, you hear all these people like, oh, we're going to run out of gas. We're going to run out of crude oil. The wells are all going to go dry. We got to figure out another way to do this. Well, guess what? You got to figure out another way to store power quickly, because you're going to deplete the earth of the rare earth metals that you need to make these batteries. This is not a viable solution at all. I don't know who, It's so strange to me to be on this side of my life and to think, you know, between 0 and 25 or 30, I thought all of these geniuses had it figured out. I thought all these people in the federal government actually, you know, knew what they were doing. I'm saying between 0 and probably 20, I guess. About 20 years old, I started, well, I had enough knowledge to challenge things that I heard, and I would go research myself. But how we get to the, how you get to the point where you have an entire population believing something that's a fantasy. It's just absolutely, it's as unreal as your selected pronoun to me. It cannot be done. It cannot be done. And I may rework these numbers and figure out maybe if I made some horrendous error. I just think, even if I'm 1,000... Oh, if I'm 1,000... you know, spaces off, there's still not enough. Oh, my God. Okay. Yeah, and I go on to say, of course, at night and on cloudy days, a natural gas generator kicks in to fill the gap. Got to fill the gap. And the other thing was, you know, the community really didn't experience, you know, the strongest. I have to give these people some credit. Like, they really did a very good job of designing this community. The problem is, I think when people do something like this, I think it's hard for their limited brains to expand that to everybody. Like, okay, this there was a really brilliant, I'm sure, bunch of engineers, but one specifically that talked about how they understood the wind load when they designed the structures that held the panels, and when they designed how the houses should be built. They were built to a certain set of standards that isn't state standards, you know, or city standards or hurricane standards. They were built because this engineer said, listen, this is how we're going to build houses in this community. And they still didn't actually take the brunt of a hurricane. You know, they had the outskirts. They had, you know, strong winds and rain. They didn't have storm surge. Maybe their panels will survive. Maybe it's euphoria for that little spot of land. But I'm telling you, man, if you go check this story out, and I'll have a link in the show notes, you go check this story out, and you see that field of solar panels, it is jaw-dropping. Like, you cannot believe what 650,000... I was telling Rochelle this story. I was like, oh my God. I said, I just read the greatest story. And when I was telling her, I said, yeah, I think they have like 70,000 solar panels, you know, to power this community. And I was telling her how I was going to go in and do all this, you know, calculations. And then I go, man, 70,000, that is a lot of solar panels. I go, I might have that number wrong. So I came back in and looked. I did have it wrong. Yeah, I was off by a factor of 10, the wrong way. It was 650,000 solar panels. Just ask yourself, like, would you like 650,000 solar panels anywhere in your vicinity? I'm sure some people would, or I'm sure some people would love to have the power that comes off of those solar panels in the daytime and when it's not cloudy. I'm sure. But man, you got to start thinking, like, are we really going to head that way? We're not. Number one, you're not ever going to get to the point where environmentalists allow you to destroy certain, let's say, wetlands. You're not going to be putting these solar panels on wetlands. Oh, no, they would have a complete fit about it. And every single, it doesn't matter what environment you put these solar panels on, you're going to change that environment, because that environment, any of it, does not have solar panels on it right now. And you're going to change the environment. I could actually even imagine when you have a big, when you have 650,000 solar panels in one densely packed area, I bet you have weather changes below and above those solar panels. And I am talking very locally, like within 3 feet of the panels that are above the ground. You're going to change the temperature of the ground. You're going to change the airflow of the ground. I mean, who knows? Maybe you actually create wind or air or drafts by having, you know, these black surfaces painted, pointed toward the sun, which, of course, they're going to heat up. They're going to heat up the air above them. Hot air rises. Well, not hot air rises. The cool air from below is going to get pulled up there, and you're going to create a little draft. I'm just saying, like, based on freaking science and what everybody tells you about how thunderstorms occur, you're going to create little microclimates. And you're going to change the environment. So if you took every single speck of available land in the United States and made it solar, you're not going to provide enough. It's baffling to me. Thank you for that. Oh my God, that was funny. Oh, I appreciate that. How dare you squash our dreams? I'm so sorry. But you know what? Sometimes the truth hurts. Sometimes you just have to hear the truth, you know? There's got to be an end. There has got to be an end to this somewhere. I don't know who's pushing it the most. I don't know if it's like the World Economic Forum, which they got to be smart. They got some smart people in there crunching numbers all the time. Like, how many vaccines do we have to give the entire world to get rid of, you know, most of them, to cut the population down to whatever, 500,000 people. You know, there's got to be a way we can do this, and we can use nanoparticles and spike proteins and, you know, incomplete mRNA strands to do this. I'm not kidding. I'm nearly speechless. Not quite, but nearly speechless. I don't know. I think I'm going to go on this campaign. I'm going to rework the math. I'm not going to ask for any help, because probably I'd run into some, you know, professor at the local, you know, university. Although I might call him and ask him. And just ask him if I've missed by some factor of 1,000 or 10,000. I would have to be like a factor of 10,000 off to even make this a tiny bit feasible. And I can almost guarantee you I'm not a factor of 10,000 off. Almost. I mean, I didn't breeze through the math, but I'm telling you, I went through the math step by step, and I'm pretty sure it's correct. And I couldn't believe it when I couldn't believe it when I saw it. All right. Did I finish that? Let's see. Seems like. Yeah. Okay. So Babcock, Florida, if you want to go check it out yourself, there's a bajillion news stories on it right now. I really dislike NPR, but you know what? I dislike all the other alphabet news places too. And NPR came up closest to the top, I think. That's why I used it. And it doesn't matter. I was just using their facts and figures. And then went and did some research on solar panels myself. And then my own personal experience here. Like, I already know, man. You have to get these things, like, in the perfect spot to generate some power. And I know if you're doing it for commercial or residential purposes, you're going to put them on those platforms that rotate and levitate to point the panel 90 degrees perpendicular to the sun. I was going to say 24/7, but let's say during the daylight hours. And yeah, good luck. I mean, good luck. But I may go on a campaign just to tell everybody just how stupid this is. Oh, mining single cell refillables? Oh, I have to look into that. I'm not sure what you're talking about, so let me check that out. Oh my God, you guys cracked me up. Almost made me completely lose it right here. All right, hey, I did want to, last show I was talking about concussions in the NFL, and I want to tell you, this is kind of weird, and I don't have any notes on this whatsoever. I'm just saying, man, I've seen in the past week, and I really don't know if I'm more sensitive to looking for concussions, or if it's just that more concussions are happening. But I've seen, and it's kind of scary to me, knowing what I know about the vaccine and how that was forced on everybody. I'm seeing, you know, healthy young men take hits that, I mean, maybe would have caused a concussion before, or maybe not. I don't know, but a lot of guys are getting concussions. I was watching college football today with Wisconsin was playing Northwest, and they beat them. And but, I mean, during that game, I mean, there was times when it was like a couple plays in a row, somebody got a concussion. I was thinking, man, pretty soon they're not going to have anybody left to play because everybody's going to be on concussion protocol. But I'm sure we're going to find out more and more about that. And I mean, seriously, there's so much stuff coming out now. True scientific research, like people who are trained to research stuff, like trained to manipulate, to gather data and run statistical analysis on it and then spit out some result that you and I can, you know, look at and maybe make some sense of. Let me go down to, I want to see if this is the story I'm looking at. I was thinking about, oh God, I hate that. No, it's fine. Now listen to this. U.S. drug regulators are refusing to provide key analysis of a COVID-19 vaccine safety database, claiming that the factual findings cannot be separated by internal discussions protected by law. So what they're saying is, yeah, we did something, you know, and we can't tell you, you know, about the safety concerns that we found because it's protected by law. In other words, the companies that made those jab juice, you know, components probably have some kind of copyright protection, patent, whatever, and they're not going to let, you know, anybody see it. The Epic Times asked the Food and Drug Administration in July for all analysis performed by the agency for the COVID-19 vaccines using a method called empirical Bayesian data mining, which involves comparing the adverse events recorded after a specific COVID-19 vaccine with their recorded after vaccination with non-COVID-19 vaccines. A bunch of gobbledygook, if you ask me. But the bottom line is, the FDA refuses to provide key COVID-19 vaccine safety analysis. But luckily, we just have to depend on real research like the following. And here was a 50-page study concluded that mandates for COVID-19 boosters for young people may cause 18 to 98 actual serious adverse events for each COVID-19 infection-related hospitalization theoretically prevented. Now, you guys heard me for 2 years say that they cannot say that they are preventing hospitalizations. They cannot say that you specifically would have been sicker if you didn't take the jab, because it's a very Schrodinger's cat. Like I said, you can't say that without actually putting somebody through it, and you can't put somebody through it because you can't put them through it both ways. You know, unvaccinated get COVID, and then vaccinated get COVID, and measure the difference. And even if you could, the difference may be because the person's immune system was better or worse at the time that they got infected, for whatever reason, either the jab or their natural immune system was better. The bottom line is, this paper points out that the federal government was saying, you know, hospitalizations prevented. And this paper is literally calling them out and saying hospitalizations theoretically prevented by getting the boosters and stuff. But here's the deal. So 18 to 98 actual serious adverse events for each theoretically prevented hospitalization. That's pretty crazy. And here's the problem. Like, students at universities in the United States, Canada, and Mexico are being told that they must have a third dose of the vaccine against COVID-19 or they will be unenrolled. Unvaccinated high school graduates who are just starting college also are being told the COVID-19 vaccines are mandatory for attendance. Sorry about that. Okay, last week when my mic fell off, I should have fixed it, right? I just realized what the problem was. The little kind of mic clamp had a felt footing on it so it wouldn't damage your very expensive furniture that I got for a couple bucks at a yard sale. So I took the felt thing off, and now it's screwed tightly to the wooden bookshelf I have next to me. I think it'll be fine. Sorry. All right. Damn it. So where was I? Oh, yeah. This whole COVID vaccine thing. Let's break open the notes, see where I was. Students at university in Canada, Mexico, and the advice to young, my advice to young people is don't get the jab and don't go to college. Honest to God. There is not enough return on investment right now to go to college, especially if you have to put your life in danger. And kind of what led me here today is that, I'm looking at these young athletes. They had, somebody told me, like, hundreds of athletes died in that 2 years. Young, healthy athletes that have nothing else in common except that they got the vaccine. They had no pre-existing conditions. These soccer players that dropped dead on the pitch. I mean, I'm surprised we didn't have more football and basketball players here in the United States just drop from it. I don't know what happened there. I mean, maybe they were fortunate enough. They got a placebo or I don't know what. But for some reason, you know, we haven't had a lot of people die. But look at this. I mean, the numbers, and I don't have any data. I'm just saying my own personal kind of observation, being a sports fan for, I don't know, most of my adult life. Well, pretty much all my life, as a matter of fact. I've never missed a Super Bowl game and, you know, some other championships too, but I mean, so I've seen it for myself, and I'm seeing it today. And the thing is, like, the NFL has increased the supposedly increased the safety of these helmets. They've actually had people over the last several years, you know, talk about the concussion protocol and what they can do to limit damage to the brain. And yet here we still have young people, you know, getting these concussions and getting these brain injuries. The young man I talked about last week, he's going to be off, I bet you, for a month. And if he was smart, probably the rest of the season. Actually, if he was really smart, which he isn't now because he's got some brain damage, he would just say, you know, call it quits. Like, you know, it's probably a good idea, I quit. Like, kind of like me and, you know, heart attack and changing my diet. It's kind of like, okay, like I had one brain injury that put me out for a couple weeks. I probably ought to stop playing this game. Like, is it worth your life? Is it worth your, I mean, especially when we have people now 30 years, 20 years after their NFL career is over, and they're committing suicide because they have this, you know, traumatic brain injury syndrome, and they're just like haunted or taunted by this pain and by depression and by, you know, stuff that goes on in their head from having a brain injury. It's your brain, for God's sake, like your heart. You know, take care of it. Like, don't take any more hits to your brain. That would be a good idea. But the sad thing is, yeah, that's what I'm seeing. I mean, I'm seeing it for myself. And I just wanted to mention it because I've been talking about that for, well, the last show anyway, talking about that one guy who had two concussions in 4 days because, you know, idiots didn't stop him from playing. And they should have. Yeah. The jab was known to be virtually worthless from the beginning, too. And the sad thing about this is this came out from some hackers in the UK that hacked into the emails. And, data leak, it says, reveals disturbing facts about mRNA instability. And the funny thing is, okay, there's a lot of funny things about this. Number one, thank you, hackers, for getting in there, getting the information, and then spilling it to, like, journalists and independent investigators who would actually do something with it to make a difference in this world instead of just following along and mark step, you know, preaching the current message or whatever administration. Drives me crazy, but I'm thankful for the hackers. Anyway, let's see this. I got to get a load of them. Oh my God, did I turn my camera back on? Did I turn my sound back on? No. Oh yeah, I did. Oh, okay. No adverse. Oh, let's see here. Oh yeah, story at a glance. I got this right here. Let me go down through this. Jab juice was known to be virtually worthless, was forced on the world anyway. Cyber attackers retrieved more than 40 megabytes of Pfizer COVID jab data from the European Medicines Agency in December of 2020. The hacked data was subsequently sent to journalists and academics worldwide. It was also published on the dark web. Some of the documents show European regulators had significant concerns over the lack of intact mRNA in the commercial batches sampled. Compared to the clinical batches, i.e. the shots used in the clinical trial, 55 to 78% of the commercial shots had a significant difference in percent of RNA integrity and truncated species. I think they mean splices. Oh, sorry. In one email dated November 23, 2020, a high-ranking EMA official noted that the commercial batches failed to meet expected specifications and that the implications of this RNA integrity loss were unclear. In response to the findings, the EME sent a list of questions and concerns to Pfizer. Curiously, when the BMJ asked Pfizer, Moderna, CureVac, and several regulators to specify the percentage of mRNA integrity considered acceptable, none of them replied with specifics. What we do know, and the EMA has acknowledged, is that the intact mRNA is essential for efficacy, as noted by the Bureau of Medical Journal or something like that. For an effective product, mRNA integrity needs to be 100%. So here's the deal. All those little strands of mRNA in this jab juice, they have to be complete so that when they're put together, they make a complete chain. In order to be effective, whatever that means, and they found that, you know, that just wasn't happening, that whatever process they were using to make this commercially available vaccine, it wasn't working. The mRNA, so basically what you were getting is you were getting bits and pieces of the mRNA needed to put together a full spike protein, but certain segments of that mRNA were missing, which means when the DNA polymerase or whatever it is that puts those pieces together, they're like, they reach out to grab, you know, section 412 to hook to 411 and 413, and they don't have a 412. So the whole thing falls apart. You're not making a spike protein anymore. You might make some pieces of some something that may resemble this virus or some other virus, but it's not complete. It's not what they intended it to be. And they all knew this. We're going to find out that they all knew this because, oh my God, am I running out of time? Let me just check. Oh, Jesus, I am out of time. Bottom line is, they knew about it. They did nothing about it. And I'm sorry for the 4 minutes of silence there. Here we go. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Please show your support for the podcast. This podcast is not on the biggest platforms, but it is on the best free speech platforms. Until next time, remember, all bleeding eventually stops.